gardening on the Pat Kenny Show.
Thanks to Tier Lawn Country Life. Gardens are our second nature with 15 garden centres nationwide.
Well, now I'm joined by Jim McGavin, Chelsea gold medal winner, garden designer, horticulturist, podcaster, broadcaster, and so much more. Jim, good morning.
Morning, Pat. How are you?
Now, in our garden stories this week, we are visiting Central Park in New York. And what a story there is to this park.
It's an amazing story, really. And that story really begins with its planning, the decision to have it, the ability to make that decision to have it. So cities in Europe, let's say, wouldn't have had that ability to plan big parks from the outset. But in Manhattan and in New York, they did, because they knew the population was exploding. So they had the ability to plan the grid system in terms of for the streets and this big open space. And some people felt they needed the big open space. Other people wanted to speculate with the land for property prices.
I mean, if you fly over Manhattan and you can't do it anymore in the helicopters, I did the trip years ago. One of the most terrifying helicopter flights I've ever had. You can actually look down and see the people individually, and you can imagine yourself tumbling from the sky. But you're on top of these skyscrapers, looking down on them. You can see the air conditioning units and all the rest, and then you swing over Central Park and everything changes.
Everything changes because the landscape is, it's not like a formal European park. They didn't want that. They wanted it to look as natural as possible. One of the reasons it was developed is that there were so many new immigrants to the city. Often these immigrants were from Germany or indeed Ireland. And if they were from either of those places, they had probably grown up in rural situations. They were probably the poorest of the poor who had to emigrate, but they were used to green fields. And when they arrive in New York, they found a kind of city down at the southern tip of Manhattan, where, let's say, the World Trade Centers were. That was where people gathered. The streets were very narrow. It was dirty and smelly. There was lots of disease. And yet the town commissioners, the planners, knew that the population was changing, and they knew they had the ability to do something. Also, up further in Midtown, you had, I don't know if you're watching that Gilded Age on Sky at the moment, which shows the people who were the Vanderbilts and whoever else were building the big mansions on Fifth Avenue and whatever. They wanted a place to promenade and to drive around in their carriages. And the city planners felt everybody should have a democratic space. So that's what they decided on.
Now, the question was that the land had been the traditional home of certain Native Americans, and they were displaced over the years and ultimately the last vestiges removed.
Absolutely removed. And not only that, there was also a village or a town in there with 200 owned by freed black slaves. So slaves who had won their emancipation, 200 of them, had a thriving village. There were also other communities, again, of Irish and Germans in this kind of hilly place. But the Native Americans were well used to the topography of that place, because for hundreds of years they'd been going through the forests, the streams, the undulating landscape. They were migrating type of tribes. So from season to season, they certainly used it. And all of them were just moved out. And not only that, when they were moved out, the black families in particular, none of them were employed. So 20,000 people were employed to create the park. Again, mainly Irish and German, Irish in particular, for the building works, for the roads, for the 36 bridges, for the castle that was built in there, for what became the zoo, but none of the black population who had owned land in there and lived there and had just been moved out. So it wasn't terribly democratic, let's say, the building of it.
Now, just to put it in a context, how big is this park?
It's about 700 acres, so it's absolutely massive. It's huge. It didn't start off like that, but when it got traction, they decided to add, over the kind of generations, they added other plots of land to it, because once it was opened, once it was developed and once it opened, it became a huge hit and people really use it. Now, it was gentrified, and the posh people did try to keep, let's say, ordinary people out of it. But from the planning, again, they took the decision not to have big ornate gates or archways, triumphal archways for people to go through it. They wanted it as simple as possible, and they wanted to open it up to as many people as possible.
Now, do you have to go round the park, or can you go through the park by horse-drawn carriage, by bicycle, by car?
You can certainly cycle through it. You can go through car. But when the original developer, so there was a competition held, and a guy called Frank Law Olmsted, an American garden designer, and a British guy called Calvert, they won the competition. They based the design on a park in Birkenhead in England, very near Liverpool, just across the Mersey from Liverpool. And Joseph Paxton had designed that park, and he had designed it in this naturalistic, very gentle way. So they felt, this is what we want to do. And yes, they knew part of the commission was to ensure that there was some crossings for horse and carriage through it. But what they did was very clever. They sunk the roads in it. So I think there's 3 crossing points, but you can't see cars when you're in it. And indeed, there were areas for sheep to graze, and that only stopped in the 1930s. So it's really quite incredible to think of that long history since the mid-1800s, when it opened first, having sheep in it grazing. And now there are roads with cars and with taxis, and you can cycle and skate and do whatever you want to get across it.
Yeah. Now, the question of what it contains, you mentioned the zoo, which started out as a menagerie of assorted animals. It's now the zoo. What else does Central Park contain?
I suppose the main thing is 270,000 trees and shrubs were planted. It has an aqueduct, it has a zoo, it has a castle, which was originally planned, which is called the Belvedere, originally planned as a weather centre. It doesn't act in that way anymore, although they do have the equipment to calculate the amount of rainfall and sunshine. It has restaurants, it has an ice rink. Most important, it has gathering spaces. So it has big open spaces for people to gather. In Europe, there would have been this tradition of protest. New York had no such place that large crowds from Ireland could gather to protest. And that is one of the features that was introduced. And later on, for instance, in 1981, these areas that were planned as open fields that were sometimes grazed by sheep became venues for concerts. So in 1981, you'd 500,000 people gather in the park to listen to Simon and Garfunkel in a free concert.
Now, obviously, Donald Trump is putting lots of things up for sale. It's not in his gift to sell Central Park. But if it were to be within his gift to sell Central Park, how much would it be worth?
Well, funnily enough, I did go ice skating there. I found out I was a terrible ice skater when I went ice skating in Central Park. And Donald Trump was running the rink. So he has, obviously, having business interests in Manhattan, he had plenty of interest in the park also. They reckoned that if it went for sale on the open market, it would fetch about $500 billion in property values. But that's really quite funny, because it is a very expensive place to buy property, but it's an expensive place to buy property because of the proximity of the park. If the park was gone, maybe it wouldn't be so valuable, but it'll never go. It's just an invaluable lung for the city.
Dermot Gavin, garden designer, Chelsea gold medal winner, and so much more. Thank you very much for taking us to Central Park.